Yeah, that's better. That won't come out.
So now what we're going to do is we just want to talk about progression of work on the very beginning.
Are we?
Let's start.
Do we want to talk about that or?
Well, I'll tell you what happened to me today at the river.
Okay.
I was sitting down by the river and I was looking at the little rivulets. You know, the waves, the way the sand goes, like wavy or wavy.
Yeah.
Where the river's gone open on the bed of the river. And I noticed that there were little stones placed randomly on the river, you see.
On the bed.
Yeah.
Under the water.
Yeah. And then I started thinking about that last piece that you made and thought about how, you know, thinking about the ideas of just having, you know, looking at natural things and their rhythms and thinking how you can apply it to making work.
Yeah.
And I thought about these stones and how they got there.
Yeah.
And realised that what was important, and I think actually what sort of happens a bit in that work is that the stones are like the sort of big sounds, you know, that come up out of somewhere, but they only look as though they've been properly placed there because they've actually had a journey to get there. They've actually had to journey from somewhere down the river before that. Of currents and things, they finally place themselves there. You know how you talk about things feeling right.
Yeah.
And then I realised that they.
It's an interesting idea.
That unless they'd had a journey, their sense of rightness, like if you threw that stone in there, just randomly threw those stones in, they wouldn't look the same as if. Looking at them having journeyed down the river and landed there for what all the different reasons that they land and sit in this place.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about when you're making sounds, you know, just in a piece, particularly if they come out of something, it's important that they've had a sort of oral journey inside the piece before they come identifiable. And I think...
You mean they go through different transformations?
Well, no, I think that in that piece that you made, the last piece, say, that it's sort of like, there's like the dance to your daddy material.
Yeah.
And it's like...
You see that as like stone?
It's like it has a history inside of the piece before it comes up to the surface and you see it. And I think that... The things to feel, and it's like you maybe haven't even really heard them at that level, but somehow or other they've been in the piece and then sort of they surface rather than just being put there, you know, for effect, to be allowed a sound or for drama or for whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering if that's how you're thinking about natural objects and things, you're thinking about...
Well, I've never been able to make a direct link between those two things, really, except that I often say I feel innately there is a similarity.
Yeah, maybe just observing those sort of rhythms and things, you just sort of notice them and
but I mean, the thing that you're pointing out is really that the working process of making the work is a bit like the, you know, the ecology of a natural.
Well, I was thinking more specifically, actually. I was thinking of that actual piece and thinking of... Well, I mean, it's not necessarily that's what you did, but I was just thinking about it and thinking that if, this, you know, the sounds feel more embedded in the piece, if they're sort of there before you actually... They come out at you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, you know what? Now, I'll tell you my anecdote.
Yeah, okay.
when I went down to wash the two white bowls in the river this morning.
Yeah.
And the river was really black.
Yeah.
And that peaty dark brown black. And after I washed them, I just put them down by the river and a surge came along and picked them up and they started to float.
Yeah.
And they were just floating in the river, and before I took them out, they banged against each other.
Mm.
And they made this beautiful sound.
Oh no.
And I just had this idea of putting onto the river a myriad of floating sounding objects like that. And as the tidal surges and ripples and so forth happened, they would all make these beautiful sounds. Like a whole lot of crystal glasses.
You know? Oh, actually putting it on.
Yeah.
How are we going to get crystal glasses here? Right.
But these bowls look so beautiful because they were they were that bone white on this black river.
Mm. That little boat.
And they were just, and the way they moved, they would move, you know, one eddy would take one bowl away and then, the next eddy would bring the next bowl up to it again, you know. Mm. But they moved in a sort of a concertina fashion relative to each other on the surface of the water.
You're going to have to do the rise.
Right. I think probably, you know, what I've always been intrigued by is what's the equivalent of the natural forces, you know, the forces of the water and the physics of the situation. And I think it's the actual process of aesthetic preference that you have, you know? That you, why do you treat a sound in a particular way, do certain things to it, and then say, right, that's right, I'm not going to do any more to it, you know? And that's, the reason you do that is because it fits with the other sounds that it has to fit with, you know? And if you shift it or change it around, then you have to do more things to it. And also,
well, it fits with the feeling and also that you want.
Yeah, if you're looking for a sound or a particular part of your piece is not somehow or other not right yet, when you're going through your, you know, your palette of sounds that you've already constructed, then it's the same process. You're looking for something that's going to actually feel as though it belongs there.
Well, you know, that just thinking about those things for a minute, just the ideas about the natural forces and things, do you think that they feed directly, or do you think they're just like you observe things, you sit and watch them, and then it's not like you may even make, like I do, a direct correlation. It's just that what you notice is that certain things happen and certain other things don't happen, or, you know, like how does that get used in a compositional way?
Well, that's what I was trying to explain.
Mm. Oh, you mean I missed the point? I was too busy chopping up my lettuce.
I don't know, but it's very interesting because that thing that you've been talking about, I've been thinking about particularly since the visit to the Trustons and Phil talking about his methodology.
Oh, right.
And I've come to the conclusion that with Phil, because the interesting thing about Phil is once he's got a starting impulse, you know, some kind of image to start with, like
just
in the case of these latest works, his thorax and genitals, you know, then he forgets completely about the source. He can do whatever he wants with it.
Yes,
you know.
It doesn't matter.
He'll add bits to it, he'll chase things through it, and he'll ornament things and so forth. And but if you say, everything has a name, but the things don't necessarily have to make sense. You know? Like the formal, the sort of, the actual formal compositional world of the painting takes over completely. But he doesn't ever think of it purely formally. You can say to him, what's this? And he says, oh, that's my nipple.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm.
He can always name something. And you say, why is it pink? And he say, oh, that's because the bird's wing is pink. And you say, what's the bird got to do with it? He says, oh, well, you know, I'm using the bird colours to save me from having to worry about what colours to use.
Mm.
You know.
So it becomes sort of an alchemy thing.
And the fact that these are all reference things for particular objects that only he knows about is not a problem for him.
No.
And it's not a problem for the work either. The work succeeds. You know?
And he would say it's not a problem for the...
Right. And I got a feeling that, I mean, in that last piece that I made, that was the sort of thing that I was doing too. I mean, I asked myself the question, what's the relationship between Dance for Your Daddy and, you know, the sound of and somebody clapping, you know? And in the end, I just thought, well, I don't care.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of new, is it? Is that sort of new?
Well, it just freed me up not to worry, you know.
Mm.
And why is there a train and an aeroplane and so on? In other words, because previously, you know, the whole idea is, and Wishart's idea is, if you use a sign and it refers to something, you have to take that into account.
Mm.
You can't just use it as a sound.
Yeah.
But that's what Phil does all the time.
Yes. But the thing is, he will use that as a starting point and then goes on to distort it, doesn't he?
Yes.
In such a way that, you know, you might be looking at it
two
inches from your nose or standing on your head or...
But so do I, through very close microphone.
Mm.
It's exactly the same as amplifying, you know, making the image larger so that it's not recognisable.
Mm. Why do you think it should have to be recognised as a sound?
Well, I'm coming to the conclusion that it doesn't.
No. Not unless you, part of it is that you need to understand that, because everything else in the piece refers in a way, so that if it's important that you should know it is, then it's obviously important that you do know it is.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Well, I suppose then you have to decide whether in fact you're making a work that has to be recognisable as something or not.
Mm.
You know. And that's quite different to using recognisable things.
Yep.
As an impulse to make a work that's actually abstract, or juxtaposed, a juxtapositional work. Yeah. See, in electroacoustic music, historically, there's this term reduced listening.
What does that mean?
Reduced listening means when you hear the sound, a recognisable sound, don't listen to its reference, only listen to its sound.
Mm.
And that was the old music concrete way of working, you know, the French used. So they make field recordings of people coughing and so forth and all sorts of things, and then they just use them as sounds. They wouldn't use them as signs.
Right.
And they say, oh, that's reduced listening. And then it became very fashionable to say, reduced listening is impossible.
Right.
You can't ignore the fact that a sound is recognised. But I've got a feeling that, I mean, and just looking at Phil's latest work and listening to him talk, that's exactly what he's doing. He's ignoring completely, you know, and so he sticks all these little wiggly lines around something. Mm. And you say, what's that? He says, oh, that's just ornamenting it. It needed something there.
The space didn't work.
But then he'll look absolutely precisely at a part of his body and render it as accurate as he possibly can.
Yeah. And then disorients it by what he puts around it.
Yeah. Is it time to eat now?
But I mean, Phil's work and Phil's way of working isn't entirely alien to...
No. And there are similarities, but there are also great differences too, you know.
Mm. Well, he never uses anything personal. Well, I suppose his family are personal.
Well, and his body and his genitals.
Oh, well, this is fairly new though, isn't it? That he does that.
I think he uses personal things all the time.
Well, he uses familial things.
Yeah.
But he doesn't use... I mean, how much of Phil is in there?
Well, I don't know. Quite a lot of it. I'll stop this thing.
Oh, is it still going?
It's stop the tape. No, let it run. No, stop the tape.
Been here.
It's good, isn't it?
How long? About 12 days, 13 days?
Yeah.
And we've only got about 6 days, 4 days to go if the weather doesn't drive us out. So, I thought we'd just, because neither of us have really done any overt work since we came here, maybe just talk a bit about why we think that is. Why this visit, why it's a bit different to other visits, and is it, do you think, in the light of?
Well, I suppose it is in terms of the current crisis.
Your current crisis.
This is my current crisis.
Would you care to elaborate on that? It's different for you because of that, is it?
Yeah. Well, I think all the things we've been talking about the place and the light and the sea, all of that's still just as strong, but the impulse to make work from it and in it is not there.
Why do you think that
is? Well, not directly anyway, with the materials and so forth.
Mm. Not work with stones and
things. No. Mm. No, I think it's just, it's just time to move on.
Mm. It's just that it represents quite a large chunk for both of us.
Yeah.
Of work.
Yeah.
When you consider how long, and it was a very intense period of envelope of time, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. But I think that.
So how do you feel? How do you feel that that is?
What do you mean?
Well, does that feel less being here because it's like
well,
that?
It's been happening for a couple of years,
Mm.
The work's petered out. I've engaged in less projects. So
apart from the actual works that, were done as installations on the beach here,
yeah,
and the sort of processes that you've gone through, like
yeah,
the sun walks,
yeah,
and the burial,
yeah,
and all those just trial tripods, the harp,
yeah,
things, yeah. Apart from the obvious ones that have been site specific, like the big,
yeah,
installation out on the beach,
yeah,
and the big tripod and,
yeah,
that videotape stuff we got in May.
Yeah.
How do you think that that's... Well, there's the whole photographic works that have come out of...
Yeah, although most of the photographic works have actually... Well, there's the shadow works, which have actually...
Mm.
I mean, really, the main works that have come out of here are the 4 half-hour video documents.
What about the
Aria? Oh yeah, then there's the actual stones.
The stones.
Yes, there's Aria and works like that that have used the stones in the studio situation.
And the photographic works that have sprung from that.
Yes, yes.
And the sound material that's been...
Well, the sound material is another factor really that's been used in a lot of works,
mm,
electroacoustic works, directly.
So there's sort of like just the sound environment that this offers,
yeah,
to get material,
yeah,
and there was the actual on-site stuff.
That's right.
That was actually made.
That's right. And the processes that took
place. And then there were the processes that sort of fed back,
yeah,
indirectly.
Yeah.
Not to mention the musings and the speculations and the theories.
That. Yes, that's right.
You were saying the other day you thought all those. Remember we talked about. It's sort of almost like those theories. How did that work? It was something to do with your insularity as a child and that sort of creating those theories out of the need to write down and make order and sense of.
Yeah.
Was there,
well, was there, so, I think there? It's something to do with just being involved in your own, my own private world, you know.
Mm. And you think that's this, a continuous thread from childhood through to...
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. And that's... that's part of the crisis, I think, because that vein, which was extremely deep, sort of has broadened out and it's no longer accessible in pure form anymore.
Mm.
You know, which has got a lot to do with, you know, Dad's death and dealing with all of that.
Mm.
And
it's also something to do with where you are in point of your life and age and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's right. My own sense of mortality and all. There's nothing unusual about that, I think. But for me, because the work all stemmed basically from an autobiographical area, really. It doesn't matter how seemingly... I mean, there's some works which obviously aren't directly autobiographical, but the impulse to make it all came from there, which went right back to very early experiences.
Mm. You always link that somehow or other to your father, don't you, rather than just directly to yourself?
Yeah, well, I link it to the...
Well, the vacuum that was
left. Yeah, that's right. Well, not just to him necessarily. Mm. It's focused on him, sort of identified through him, but it was that whole situation that happened very early, during the war, I think. Actually, while he was away.
Mm.
Probably more
the
than
the sense of being in a sort of cauldron of feelings.
Yeah.
And the only way to cope was isolate yourself off.
Yeah. So the alone, solo sort of thing, making sense of things in that way, is, you know, really deeply ingrained habit.
Mm.
But I think what's emerging now is that, like, I have made some sound recordings here, and I think the link to, you know, my fascination with sonority, that links back to the childhood thing too, but in a very broad, general sort of way. It's capable of opening out.
Yeah.
And that's why I think I'm focusing now more and more on just purely sonic stuff.
You know how we were talking about, it was almost like that window of time was given us, if you like, in inverted commas, by the beach?
Yeah.
Because if, you know, when we, because we started, we found this place by accident on holiday, and we liked it and came back. And I don't remember us coming back for a particularly long time. And it wasn't, we didn't come back because we sort of thought, saw possibilities of making it work or anything.
That
we
happened.
Just purely came back
That's
as
right.
a place that looked wonderful and we wanted to explore.
Yeah.
And in fact, if my memory serves me correctly, did we come here like maybe even 3 or 4 times before?
Yeah.
And that
Absolutely.
Just sort of happened as a sort of...
Yeah.
Like, how did that start? It just was...
Well, it started just...
And also remember, just right at this end of the beach where we camp, that bank of stones was spectacular.
That's
that
right.
year. There were huge, beautiful, round stones, a lot of them of about the same proportion in size and weight.
That's right.
And there was a lot of driftwood, big driftwood, to make tripods.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in 87, you know, that's when I had to leave, and we came up for the second time in May. And so.
Had you done anything before then?
Yes, I had.
It had started.
I had done, but only a couple of years before then. So it's probably started in... Yeah, there's probably a good 6 or 7 years that we were coming here before any actual...
We'd sort of potter around, wouldn't we? And we'd always take lots of photographs. And, and you'd make some sound recordings and things.
And I mean, you know, I mean, the video documents weren't made till the early 90s.
No, but the material was gathered early.
Yes, was from 87.
Yeah, from that leap.
Between 87 and 92.
So there must have been something, you know, the big installation on the beach, when was that made? Was that made before?
87.
Was that after, in your leave year?
Yeah, May.
So that was it. So that May, well, there was a lot of work done, because there's the big harp.
Yeah, that's right.
The big...
The water current. Lines,
water current lines, the burial,
yeah,
all that documentation of placing. I think it started with upending stones.
Yes, it did,
didn't
I think.
It?
I can't remember what it was. But it certainly was the stones that started it off.
Right. Because that May, actually, we made... the beach just became this huge resource, didn't it? Every day, new, and the sand shifting and...
But I think also the whole business of watching the tidal processes and all of that, you know, I think I was at a point where it made a lot of sense. It was very reassuring, you know, and it had a lot of, you know, very strong feelings of identification, you know, the inevitability of natural forces and all that sort of thing.
What did that spring from? Was that ideas out for another work?
No, I think it was just personal philosophy work.
Mm.
But I really identify with it very strongly. And we still do, too, actually.
Mm.
I can remember having really, really... And writing it down in my diaries, you know. I mean, really strong identification with the things that were going on. Like losing one's... entering into the environment. And a really
strong... It's sort of an interesting contradiction there, isn't it, which we've often argued about. But, I mean, particularly... that your base is so personal, and yet there's this other whole thing about a sort of almost no volition.
Well, this is what's interesting about this place, but also the Birdlings Flatworks too. The shadow transplants and all of that. Like that whole, when you think about it, that work, that whole aspect of work had nothing really to do with the autobiographical approach at all.
No.
And yet it was, and it was happening. I didn't have a clue what all that stuff was about.
Mm.
And yet it's very, very classical. That
Did it come after Memory? It did, didn't it?
Yes. It did.
Yeah.
Yes. And the idea of, but the idea of using the shadow to direct, you know, as a direction finder and so forth, happened here. That's what, and then I did used it for the Sun Walks of Birdlings Flat and so on.
So do you think what happened here is, it's sort of like coming here, you know, we both responded really strongly to the place, just the shapes and the feel and the light and all of that sort of stuff. And then there was just the straight, you know, it was not very many people and, you know, just the time. And then gradually it's like the feeling and enjoying those suddenly took on another... a noticing of what that's like. Walking down the beach, you might suddenly notice, you know, you might sort of be aware of your shadow or not, but suddenly it became you notice it falling on a stone, and because you're working with stones, there was a lot of follow-on stuff from that, wasn't it? Like it sort of went off in all sorts of it's like,
well, also
every time you see a stone there'd be almost another whole or wood or
and it went in sort of a It peaked, you know, probably in the late 80s, early 90s, I just got completely sort of obsessed with the stuff. Really.
And also, remember, we used to cart stuff back down to Christchurch. And remember, there was that whole struggle then, too, about, you know, like, can you place that in the gallery?
Or
is it site-specific? Yeah. And how do you transform all those ideas?
Well, it's interesting because the only gallery work that actually got made from those actual materials from the Rosario... There's no other work.
Apart from the photographic work.
Yes, but actual materials.
Yeah.
There were three small stones were the only works.
Yeah.
All the other big stones that I took with me, I've never actually been able to use.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
I mean, they exist in photographs and videos.
Yeah.
But that's when
they were all photographed
here.
Or videoed here, weren't they?
Yeah, that's right.
So actually, it's like the video works act as a window on that time frame.
Yeah, they do.
They sort of like caught that.
And it's really interesting, actually, you know, if you go back and look at them now, they give a really strong sense of not so much the place, but what I was identifying with.
Mm. And the place, too.
Well, the place as well. Yeah. Yes.
Well, I suppose it's sort of your aspect of the place. Do you think. Does that change the way you feel about coming here, do you think? Because you can't... Well, you know, gradually the wave scheme sort of has almost replaced that.
Well, it sort of has in a way. Yeah, it's...
Well, you can't reopen those things once it's closed, can you?
No. And actually, I don't feel any compulsion to. You know,
but it's sort of, there's a sort of vestige of wanting it because it was so intense and so focused, and it made put another whole bloom on the place.
Yes,
I know.
But I think, so I don't know what's going to happen, you know. But I mean, I just enjoy the place anyway, you know, just for all sorts of other reasons.
I mean,
and the fact that we've been coming here for so long, it doesn't feel like it's a duty or a repetition, you know, or anything like that. I mean, and I think I'm at the, well, I feel personally, I'm at the point now where we can either come here or not.
Mm.
You know, we can make up our mind in a more broad way about whether, in fact, we, or we might miss a year and actually choose to go somewhere else and come back again. You know,
not
what I mean?
Feel.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because, you know, the thing you're saying about, like, your life opening out in other areas.
Mm.
I mean, it's almost a bit like that here too, because, you know, it used to be so focused and so intense. I can remember people walking home down the beach and you'd probably hardly see, neither of us would probably hardly see them.
That's right.
We sort of, it was busy when we were here. Yes, it wasn't like a holiday. It was a holiday, but, you know, we, as soon as we got here and there was,
it was a question.
2 or 3 days of settling in and then we'd sort of be off.
Did we have time to get everything done?
Did we have time in the panic of, you know, we had about a list of projects
that's
as long
right.
as your arm.
Yeah.
But also now what happens more is because we've been coming here so long, there are 2 or 3 little clusters of people, locals who we've got to know. Just for example, like, you know, Mandy and Rod and Peter and like that. So it's almost like this, not a social, but your eyes are more lifted up.
That's
and you
right.
see
absolutely.
A bit more in terms of the people around you.
Absolutely, that's right. Yeah. Which is again just a symptom of just letting go of the obsession. But I,
what were you thinking about when you were over on the river the other day and you said to me that you were chattering away to yourself? Can you remember what you were talking about?
Well, I was just thinking, like I said to you, you know, I realised it's not, what's gone on here is just a reflection of particular requirements in myself. And a confluence of that in this particular place. But more to do with my requirements than the place. And almost like a putting on to the place of all sorts of subjective implications and so on.
Well, it's hard to know how anyone else sees it because
absolutely,
you know,
yes, but
you see it so intensely.
Yes. And so I think that's just it's part of the process of the place. Sort of, it's like it's sort of surfacing up into a normal condition.
But every now and again, it grabs you again.
Even in that way, yes, it does. It does.
That happened to me last night when I went over the other side of the river.
Yeah.
And I suddenly felt again that sort of, you know,
sort
of elation about being here.
Yes.
Seeing everything in a particular way.
I still feel that. Yeah, very much. Just walking down that beach. I mean, I don't think anybody could walk down there and not have a sense of, you know,
and I think the other thing is the weather has been so odd this time that, you know, we haven't, usually we have cycles of, of, you know, the southerly and fine day and then maybe a bit of rain and then one of those gorgeous long open still days and it's just been so strange this year and so
closed in. So, you know, I think it's almost like, you know, I was saying to you, you know, there's the period, like, you know, when both your parents are alive and then one of them is dead, you know, I was saying, it's like there was life before the death and then life afterwards. And it's just like you've begun a new life, in a way. And it sort of feels a bit like that for me. It's, again, over the last year or so, you know, letting go of all sorts of other things which were renegotiating or something. But particularly as far as the work is concerned, the whole mode of working, not the whole mode, but some aspects of it, have faded.
Which aspects do you think?
Well, the aspects that spend from you know, the fascination with Dad and identifying with him.
But how did that come out in work? As sort of like Are you thinking particularly of like road piece, that very specific
well,
text?
Well, it came out in works like that, but it actually was embodied more in the whole approach to work.
Which,
in other words, the work would just come out and surprise me as much as it did anybody else, and having absolutely no idea about what was going on, just absolutely headlong sort of stuff, you know.
Sort of very intuitive.
Yeah, absolutely, completely, and that provided, and that's one of the disconcerting things about what lies ahead for me, you know. But I've learned to trust that way of working, you know, to expect it to happen. You know. And I'm not saying that it won't continue to happen, but I just get the sense that it's not coming from that same sort of imperative. It's, I don't know what's going to happen.
There is something too about the more work you make, you know, the more knowledge you have, and the harder it is just to dive into that.
Like it does strike me sometimes, you know. I mean, what's happened here, you know. I mean, now I can spend this amount of time here. And I haven't written a single word in my book. You know, I mean, I've got no projects to embark upon when I go back home, stem from here or anything like that. You know, and sometimes I think, well, is that going to happen to me with the studio at home? You know, and that over a period of time, maybe I'll just no more work will get made there either. You know, the requirement will just stop.
But it's not like. The requirement, I mean, because you know, you've made 2 electroacoustic works last year, so it's not like this has tailed out,
yes, it has,
but it's just like things seem to go in arcs of a burst of activity. If you look back at your work, you know, there was sort of because there was a trial of working with people way back,
yep,
but that, as we talked about the other day, was driven by. You know, maybe more trying to find a method of teaching composition. So that sort of led into a whole area of exploration that came out of that.
Yeah.
After you know, your
leave. No, I think you're right. I think this particular business with Patterow is just one episode or chapter of work that's come to a closure.
It's like in real time happened the same. I mean, that was incredibly intense.
Yes, that's right.
And in fact, I mean, it lasted for about...
quite a long time.
Well, 3 or 4 years.
Oh, longer.
5 years, five years or something. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was actually a very... Well, and I remember we all felt, you know, you, Chris and I, felt the same when it stopped.
Mm.
A sort of sense of loss.
Yes,
really.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I'm still aware of, you know, what that gave. I remember Chris saying that, you know, a lot of ideas for works for him
period of time. Yeah, I know. I think that's right. I think, and I do think actually the basic, working with sound, I think, is my basic way of working.
Yeah.
And I know that connection is just really fundamental.
Yeah. So that, and well, you know, we're talking about categories of sound. Do you think you've got quite a restricted palette in that sense, in a sound sense, or not necessarily? But
well, if you look back at the works, I think you can see that there is.
Mm. I mean, and if you think of the natural world, particularly.
Yeah. Well, I've always.
But is it linked to that thing also we're talking about with say that it's to do more with. The category of sound has got its own sense of completeness or cadence within it.
Yes.
That sort of a sound rather than just...
Yes, but that's where a similar factor emerges. Like the fascination I've got with the way stones get laid down by the sea, you know, and the way the particular way they lie, you know, or the marks around the stone when the tide goes out, you know, and how that makes the stone fit its environment, you know. Well, the natural cadence of an automatic electric jug boiling and then turning off that we were talking about before has exactly those same functional elements, you know what I mean?
Mm.
An inevitability about it. Mm. And that's what gives it plausibility, makes it make sense psychologically.
Mm.
And I think that's what's informed completely innately, without me knowing it really, a lot of my choices of sounds, you know, and also what happens to them. But I think, yeah, but I think, I mean, one of the things I've always had is I would never use a sound I hadn't recorded myself.
Yeah.
You know, which is the old thing, you know, I mean. But now in Say, for example, I've used, you know, laughter sounds and so forth off of FX CD, you know, that I hadn't recorded myself at all. And other material too.
So that you're being able to be, you know, a bit wider in your choice, and it doesn't have to come from a personal.
No, and the ironic thing is that I found this laugh on an effect CD, and I defy anybody to identify it as anybody except me. It sounds absolutely like my laugh, totally.
Right.
And yet it's not. You know,
are you sure you haven't been moonlighting?
Well, I just found that so funny, you know, when I used it. You know. But so there's all that, see, sort of broadening and also being influenced, you know, by somebody else's work and given ideas about how to proceed from another piece and so on. All that's completely new. I mean, that's the sort of thing that I would never have contemplated before. I would have frowned on.
But you know, when you maybe it's come out of teaching, or maybe it's just I think maybe both, the need to find a way of teaching and encouraging people, you know, to find their own voice and to be courageous enough to do that. But also, you know, because of the personal mode, intuitive way of working. I forgot.
That restricts the sound world, I think.
No, I was going to say something. Are we? Well, anyway, that's okay. It'll come back.
But the other thing is, when I made Say, I made a very definite decision that I wasn't going to worry about using sounds in that piece that I'd used in previous pieces.
In what?
That I wasn't going to worry about, you know, there's always been the thing of you're starting a new piece, you've got to use a new palette of sounds.
Oh, right. You can't possibly repeat. Use...
But I've used... I went to all sorts of sources that I've used sounds in other pieces and used them. On the understanding that when you combine them in different combinations, you're producing a different result. And especially when you mix them and so on.
It's interesting because, you know, there's... like the earlier works had a direct voice, and it was a narrative of you. I mean, either it was you commenting on something like in Parade, or know, the Pauline work where there's you know, stuff in it, and or you know the grandfather story.
Yeah.
In,
a narrator.
Yeah, the narrator.
Or a persona like Intense Test.
Yeah. And it's sort of like the persona has become slightly more distanced. Like the little lady, I think, is the little accordion is still the persona of you.
That's,
you know,
right.
But it's like the voice is coming out in a different way. Yeah. And Say, it's maybe the piano.
Yeah, well, it's difficult to know. Yeah. But I think I've thought about that. I mean, there's some works that have a very specific concept that I try and articulate, and other works that are much more
sort of sonic-y.
Yes, sonic. And less specific. Yeah.
Mm.
So, but I mean, in a way, you know, the shadow works were the most intuitive of all. I mean, I had no idea why I was doing all that.
Certainly, there's that huge body of work that sits around the shadow pieces. It's sort of came a bit from the tripod pieces, the alien harps, then there was the bowls under the things. And then it sort of went into the shadow works, which somehow or other, in a funny way, came from the shadow and the falling on the stone.
That's right.
And then there was Aria, and there was all the works around that, and then the big work around your father's death that's never been shown.
Right.
And it's like there's this whole process. I mean, there were actually three or four. What was the name of that work with? It's not Aria. It's the one I just can't.
It was done in the annex.
Yeah.
Emblem, it was called.
Emblem. Yeah.
And then there was the automated slide work.
Yes.
Called Mandala.
That's right.
Yeah.
So there was sort of like a whole cluster of works.
Yes,
there was. And then there's all the photographic images.
That's
that,
right.
You know, and I mean, they've just. have never been shown.
No, well, I've still got ideas for those. That's why I've got those stones at home. Eventually, I'm going to make a lot of portraits of the stone, but I think of them as ancestral images.
Yeah.
I've got some more work to do there, and I'll do that quite soon.
But it's sort of interesting because maybe that's that's where the performance element has gone into those works. They've sort of gone into more installation.
Yeah.
And but the body is still there in the form of the images.
Yes,
like
right.
Either on the revolving, stones.
That's right.
Revolving stones. So why do you think that? Do you think the performance works just sort of grew naturally out of the collective play and in real time, and then it was sort of more personalised into a work and there was
I'd had images of those sorts of works I could remember very 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 early, long before I started composing conventional music. I used to have these ideas of sort of like operas,
a little
in black spaces, always in completely black spaces.
Right.
I spent a lot of time, before I met you, working in a completely black room.
Yeah.
With minimal light sources and things like this.
When we were first together, that's right. Still doing some of that pinholes.
That's
pinhole
right.
Sort of
that's
stuff
right. That's right. Yeah. I painted the whole room black.
Mm.
Completely black. Mm. So that there was no light at all. And I had this black space thing has been around for ages.
So what were you doing then?
I have no idea what I think the whole limitless or the void.
Mm.
You look at the way in which Membrane was lit.
Mm.
In bowed peace. Mm. Completely in just this
floating.
Yes. I mean, those works they're the ultimate sort of reflection of that. And I think it just came from probably, I don't know, I haven't got a clue, but it could have been just, that's the way I felt, basically.
Mm.
Just in a completely enclosed, sort of dark place.
It's interesting because those performance works were actually quite complex.
They were very complex.
And they had quite complex sort of interrelationships and there was this whole thing about how the materials all had to...
That's right, but the interesting thing is they had that same functionality.
Mm.
That we're talking about with the jug and the way the stones are laid down and so forth, and also the way in which I try and use sounds.
Mm.
I mean, everything had to really work. It's a bowed piece.
Mm. The whole idea of a closed system.
I really do feel in many ways it's a better work than Membrane.
Just in terms of structure.
In terms of a closed cycle, functional cycle.
Mm.
It's very, very strong, I think.
Well, actually, what's interesting about that was extremely powerful assistant image.
Yeah.
And then there was the whole articulating
right.
the sound through effort.
That's
which
right.
was nice.
Exactly.
The body stretching.
Yes.
And then there was the text.
Yes.
Which, I mean,
yes.
When you consider what the text was,
that's right.
About your relationship
right.
with your father
right.
and the huge effort to articulate
that's right.
that.
That's right. Yes.
And the sort of almost agony of that.
Yes.
And then there was the
yes.
title being
yes.
P-E-A-C-E.
That's right.
Yeah.
But see, the interesting thing is, that work sprang from a little note I read somewhere, I can't remember where it was, about Indian or Chilean or somebody, indigenous people, using a bow and arrow and putting a gourd on the bow.
Mm.
And placing the gourd on their stomach and plucking the string and using it as a resonator.
Using the gourd as a resonator?
Yeah.
Why would they put it on their stomach?
I'm not quite sure why. Well, they moved their stomach in and out or something.
Oh,
to
change the pitch.
Yeah, and then I remember, I think I read it here in some book or other.
Mm.
And then I immediately drew a giant, I thought immediately straight away, what if you built a giant bow and you actually used your whole body?
Mm.
And that's. That's where it came from. Remember I built that great big swinging thing in the studio that I used to sit on?
Mm.
I had a big stone on the front and I used to play it.
Yes.
And so forth. I mean, there were all sorts of gizmos like that.
Mm.
But the whole idea...
Do you remember there was huge discussions about, like, this you know, like with all those performance works and we're doing them, you know, that well, where does that sit?
Absolutely.
It has to be there for a reason, and if you walk to the left or right, it has to have some sort of implication. And actually, those pieces all had a very, a sense of, because the cube, I suppose, which immediately puts a structure around it, but it had a sense of closeness.
Yes, very
And the material, everything springing off something else. Remember, there was that thing about that, that, you know, and that it had to have a reason, it shouldn't be.
Well, I think, I mean, sleep exposure, which was the first one, you know, and then.
That wasn't actually a very closed
room. No, it wasn't. No, I mean, it was the first one. It was a real mess, really. I mean, it had all sorts of other things.
Yes, it had some incredible.
I mean, the idea of pendulums with faceless clocks on them.
Yes, there was much more metaphoric, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
That had a lot more.
And
actually, the whole screen at the back with the writing on and the
It just went completely over the top.
What was that material we painted?
Potter's glazes.
The potter's glazes. It was from the earth, and
That's right.
So it had a lot more sort of like elements and.
But then soundings with the cane.
Images.
You know, I mean, I think that was a really strong.
That was quite
very
closed.
Functional. The whole idea: the more bandages you had, the less sound, and so on. You know, I think it was a.
So worked on all sorts of layers, the sort of binding of the head and unbound, and then the words, and then the words being spoken. And
So those works really suited that functional approach to things. Mm. And also, I think I was struggling with the whole sonic thing, struggling with, you know, letting go conventional composition.
Because you didn't actually make much electroacoustic work during those years, did you?
Yes, I did. I made a whole lot of work to parallel with those. Yeah. Actually. Well.
I sort of had a feeling there was two or three years when there was not
Well, the performance works went from 1979 through to 1986.
Mm.
That's when Bode Peace was made. Now, in 19...
But Membrane was after Bode Peace, wasn't it?
No, Membrane was before Bode Peace. It was 84.
Oh.
Bode Peace was the last one.
Mm.
And, I mean, during that time, Parade was made.
Oh, but Parade was made way back.
Well, it was, being made all the time. it wasn't completed until 1982.
Take six.
Yeah. I mean, and there was Sleep Exposure, the actual electroacoustic.
Well, that sound piece came from the. But you had made that.
There was Tense Test.
But the Sleep Exposure was actually made.
From materials.
Yes, because that was actually the soundtrack.
Yes, but the trouble was, it was then completely remade.
Mm.
And then Tense Test was made during that time.
Oh, right.
Mm. And edit for Pauline.
But I sort of remember, because, you know, we were sharing the studio. It used to be, like, you'd make a work, and then you'd go and work in the studio, and I would use the studio,
and then I would
have a gap, and then you would come back and make something.
Yes, that's right. But there were electroacoustic works being made, too.
Mm.
But, yeah, well... I think there is a. It's going to be interesting to see what happens now, as far as the sound works are concerned.
Mm.
But I was thinking, this is the answer to your question. Seems to be still going. The battery's running low. You asked me what I was thinking on the beach, and actually, what I was thinking was. How things leapfrog, you know, how things sort of move and works get made, ideas get introduced as part of a work. Like, for example, when I made the quarter, I introduced all the birthday material, you know, the sonic material from birthday, and then I dumped it all because it wasn't working. And then I made all sorts of, I'd use the birthday material to make that presentation at the Auckland Symposium, you know, when I presented the birthday performance work.
Mm.
So I had a lot of stuff made like that. And now, when I get home, I'm going to make the birthday work.
Right, so it's gone to 30.
And I know exactly what to do. And I know I've got to go right back from scratch and start again, but I know I'm only going to use that material in no other. So eventually that material will finally assume a life of its own, but it's taken, I've tried to put it into all sorts of other areas, you know, and often with difficult material it'll take.
It's like finding the right form or place or time.
Or just getting clarity about it, you know. And the only way I can get clarity about it is to work with it.
To use it.
Yeah. And that,
well, that actually is interesting, because that's a very strong element of the way you work, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's actually taking material, working with it, often being overblown, cutting back.
Absolutely. Thinking I'm finished when I haven't.
Thinking finished, or else... It you know, you start with one big chunk and then that gets discarded and it actually belongs somewhere else, and that'll come out in another work. So it's sort of quite a redundant, it's not redundant way of working, but it's a sort of
It is in a way, but that redundancy is very, it's
a process way of working, really, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Having a sort of a set idea necessarily.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
It's like you've got to make it listen. Hear back, make it listen. And I mean, I think even the performance works were like that.
They were.
That sort of like, you make it, you look and think, why is that there? You know, that has to be there.
Yeah, like, and this whole habit I've got of backing up everything all the time, you know, which uses a lot of media and it's quite expensive.
Mm.
But before we came away, I was backing up all the material for say. And I had this, I found this, a backup version of the quarter, but it was called the quarter stroke birthday. And I couldn't remember anything about it, so I put it on and played it. And it was quite similar to the final version of the quarter, but it also had all these marvellous transformations of the birthday material, which I'd completely forgotten that I made.
Mm.
Beautiful, beautiful material, you know, which will fit into the final version of the birthday material beautifully, you know. And actually that's what I realised finally triggered me. I thought, now I'm fine, I've got the quarter material out of the road, I can now focus on the birthday material and I can make a work around
it. It's like all the time you're mixing up.
Yes, that's right. I mean, you often point that out, you know, you've joined too many things together, you know. But I think actually in the long haul, that's what allows the works to, you know, to get made.
And maybe what happens is it feels like, you know, you're getting removed from the intuitive process, but maybe what's actually happening is that you're just getting, just in a small way, refining that process a bit.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
Which actually, maybe it feels like you don't have to go through such a huge thing, but I mean, then you've got so much more experience.
That's
so
right.
Basically, what you're using is your experience, but it feels like you're losing your initiative, your intuitiveness,
exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
But in fact, it's not, because maybe the intuitive stroke came six paces back.
Yeah, that's right.
But now, like then, what you've just described, you can go and you can recognise, I've already done that, so I can
move.
Right.
That's right. Yeah.
So in some ways, it's harder, in some ways it's not easier, but it's different.
It's very time consuming, because I have to make sure that I haven't forgotten about material I've already made.
Yeah.
So that means going and auditioning an enormous amount of backed up material.
Mm.
And, you know, I mean, really taking care, and it's very time consuming.
And it's also just making sure that you go back and, I mean, the danger could be that you could actually just end up with lots of, you know, you've reached a certain point with lots of nice material and you could start pastiching and just move.
That's right.
The important thing is you go back and really re-inhabit
yes,
the material,
right.
And then the next growth starts from
right.
that point. You
that's
know,
right.
Onwards.
That's right. Yeah. Shall we stop with
that? Mm.